You're listening to episode 26 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on May 13th, 2010. System of language revitalization. It's viral, collaborative, and community-driven. In this episode, you'll hear Evan Gardner and I interviewing each other about our 2 days of morning and afternoon games at the Cleveland High School at our friend Kent Siebold's Theories of Knowledge class. So we went to Cleveland High School 2 days ago for 2 days. We did a morning and an afternoon sort of hour and a half or so class, both of those days. And what was our goal?
Well, we'd been going to Ken's house for, you know, a couple months now, once a month, and he said, hey, come to the school and talk to the Theories of Knowledge class. Yeah. So a junior-senior offering for college-bound students. They can actually get college credit for taking the class. And basically, it's a superior-level thought and instructional class on the theories of knowledge. Which I like the title.
Yeah.
And so I think that Where Your Keys fits in beautifully with the theories of knowledge and how is knowledge transferred, how is knowledge acquired, how is knowledge created and dispersed and, you know, all those different fun thoughts that can go into a theories of knowledge class. So he said, come to our class. I thought that was a great idea for a couple reasons. One is that, so we did 4 sessions. We did 4, what were they, hour and a half sessions?
Yeah, a little more, actually.
Hour and 40 minutes or something?
Yeah, yeah.
So they have this nice block scheduling there at Cleveland High School that allowed that to happen. And so we went there, and we did a really couple of sweet experiments. We were very interested in having a large crowd. So the classes were minimum 20 kids per class, and really we haven't done a 20-person Lotus like this with the same age group. So bright kids, because they're in this Theories of Knowledge class, right? So this isn't like, you know, this isn't Stitch 101. This is Theories of Knowledge.
Right.
And so they're young kids, all probably between the ages of 16 and 18. Boys and girls, just to be clear. And they were spry, intelligent, and lots of them.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to do the experiment of how far can we take a group like that, because we now have a lunatic fringe that can really support all the people in there. The kids are going to get full. They're going to call full. And we have this sort of limitless supply of lunatic fringers who can jump into the inner circle.
Yeah.
And that really was the biggest experiment in how to sort of manage a large group like this. And, you know, will everybody be able to see, you know, what are some of the issues that are going to come up and, you know, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, we also did this one experiment that went horrible.
Yeah.
It went terrible.
Yeah.
And my apologies to the 2 brave students who put up their hands and volunteered for this. I thought, this was my experiment, I thought, hey, when we get there, like right when we walk through the door, let's do a language hunt on a kid with a second mother tongue. Well, a mother tongue other than English. Just to show them what we're doing and where we're going. So, hey, who in the crowd speaks another language as their mother tongue? This girl raised her hand, like, oh, hey, what do you speak? Vietnamese, all right. Hold up a red pen, what's this? And she's like, oh, I'm very shy. And she's looking over at her friend, help me out. He's like, well, I speak Vietnamese too. And so I'm like, okay, well, how do you say what is that in your language? And I'm not going to brutalize the Vietnamese at this point. But needless to say, the question, what is that, happens in Vietnamese to be almost identical to "that is a red pen," which was terrible. It just happened to be the worst prop I could have possibly picked. There was confusion. The kids were looking at us like we were crazy, like I was crazy. I don't know. Did you get any heat off that? Were they looking at you like you were nuts too?
No, I was protected from it.
Oh, nice. Everybody's looking at me then, yeah. Like, what are you doing to this poor kid? Yeah, so that didn't go out very well. And really, a couple of things happened. We had no trust built. The kids didn't know anything about where we were going, had no idea what we were even doing there, and the experiment just started off on the wrong foot. So I will never, ever do that again.
Yeah.
It's just really a waste of time.
Yeah.
It's cool, but really doesn't pack the wall up that I thought it was going to. So, great experiment, gone awry. The other thing that we noticed, so you ran that first morning game.
I did.
And then there was kind of you were having sort of an issue with the kids who were there, basically at a high school against their will.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of going into schools. Frankly, I don't like schools, and I don't think they're good for kids. All right. There it is. Yeah. So, but I've had a couple of good experiences, especially I've been in Kent's classroom before, the classroom we went into, and actually Kent and Gay both. And so what happened was so you mentioned that we've set up the Lotus. So, of course, the Lotus is the classic core arrangement of chairs, five around a low table in the center, and then other chairs fit in like petals around that central circle, right? That is the Lotus, and that goes out as far as you can go. At some point, it becomes really difficult to see what hands are doing as you get farther out in that ring. But we find we can accommodate, you know, close up to 20, you know, in that sort of arrangement, getting near to 20.
Well, and I'm curious about if we can push it to 30 or 40.
Right.
Just to have a little two fringe bouncing off of each other. I think it's possible.
Right. And so that was part of the experiment. You know, we wanted to see was how big of a group can we manage? And certainly we set up one of our other experiments was what if we give, well, okay, so the first thing that happened, what drove this next experiment I'm about to mention is I was sitting in that game surrounded by an outer ring of people with hands in their laps and slack expressions on their faces, and which is actually not uncommon in the game as people tend to get full. Their hands tend to drop and they tend to get what deaf people call paper face. It's just sort of blank, you know? However, this was still close to the beginning, so there was no real reason for it. And it was so difficult and so disenchanting for people in the center, because here they are working and then they're just surrounded by this peanut gallery who's just watching them, you know, not helping at all. And the Lotus, or the Lunatic Fringe's job, you know, that outer ring's job, is to copycat and pull people in the center through the game, because the people in the Lunatic Fringe have less heat on them, and the people in the center ring will have all the heat on them. And, you know, that's how it feels. Of course, you know, in reality, or after you get good at the game, you start to realize, wow, it doesn't matter where I sit. You know, I just sort of follow, I copycat someone and I can stay here for quite a while. So anyway, once I had that experience of this sort of inert lunatic fringe, I chalked it up to kids feeling like they didn't have a choice, you know, didn't have like a real ability to select where they were going to be, or just to decide whether to actually be involved in the game. And it's really important. I mean, almost so many of the tools in the game are about self-selection and self-awareness. Full, the ability to call full and step out of a game into a role in the Lunatic Fringe or on a couch on the other side of the room. Limit, the ability to ask, you know, the people playing the game, let's limit the objects. Sorry, Charlie, to, you know, the ability of someone to say, listen, you're asking a question that's way over my proficiency level, you know, or even just a little bit over. But in any case, it's sorry, Charlie-ing me. So there's so many tools that they can apply to take care of themselves, but the most primary tool has to be choosing, voting with their own feet to be there. So in order for them to vote to be there, they needed an ability, they needed another option, another place they could be. Because obviously they're in school and, you know, you can't just like open up the door and say, go wander the hallways while we're doing this. So we had to engineer after that session, which, I mean, honestly, you know, keep in mind that when I say, you know, it was god-awful and, you know, disenchanting and whatever, it was probably just fine. It still went great and, you know, like, but my standards continue to get higher and higher for what is possible. And, geez, if we don't even scrape the, you know, the bottom of those sort of, you know, amazing possibilities, it's really like, man, I feel like we're wasting our time. So we, over lunch, so that was the morning session. So over lunch, we innovated a new technique called Poo Corner. Poo Corner. So Poo Corner, what we decided would be this corner off in the side, off in the corner of the room where they could just sit. It was about 10 to 15 feet away from the lunatic fringe. So it would be totally out of the game, yet the game is still visible, and they could look out the window, they could do homework, they could whatever, you know. Hopefully they wouldn't do anything that would distract from the game for the people still playing.
And they were a bunch of long tables and some chairs, but just empty.
Yeah, and so we did that, and it definitely... I also think there was a morning afternoon thing. Kids are just exhausted in the morning at school.
Oh, a little table.
It was. Oh yeah, that was the other problem. So there was one other unfortunate event. I forgot our low table, which we take everywhere with us.
About 2 feet diameter.
Yeah, it's at 2 feet off the ground, 2 feet in diameter. Actually, probably just a foot and a half off the ground. Yeah. It's pretty low. Yeah. Yeah, it's actually this sort of metal grid patio fold-up table that we throw a sort of a neutral blue, soft blue tablecloth over, and it just sort of becomes this, you know, neutral surface.
You can see that table in the What Is Where Your Keys introductory video.
Yeah, you can, can't you? Yeah, and you actually see, anytime you see a blue tablecloth in any of the videos, you're seeing that table. It's under it. So...
And a height and a size that we found so far to be the best.
Right, yeah. I mean, we cart it around, even though it's sort of nasty and rusty. If you check it out without the tablecloth on, and you're like, geez, guys, spend some money. but it just happens to be the dimensions that allow enough eyes to see the table and to see hands above the table. It's just perfect.
To put our knees up against it and to be able to see through the different players, the five people in the center inner circle, allow them to see their angels on their shoulders and all that. It's just sort of that 2 foot diameter just allows knees touching and just enough space in between everybody that they're not spread out too far and they still have some body dynamics, but they can still see their, you know, two or three or four angels on their shoulders.
Yeah, the inner circle is defined as the five chairs around that table with whom the people sitting in the chairs, their knees are touching the table, actually touching the edge of the table. We've found that if you don't define it that way, the circles behind those chairs that sort of fit in each of the nooks in the space between those chairs, five chairs arrayed around the table, it tends to get muddy. Like, well, who's in the inner circle and who is... We've even gone so far as quite often to... whenever we have the choice, we pick one color chair for the inner circle and another color or type of chair for the lunatic fringe. So this is, you know, highly designed environment. Well, so in the classroom, no table. Well, oops. So, and of course, actually, all the chairs are those sort of school chairs, you know, those wooden seat metal leg chairs that you remember. And so we grabbed a stool and we threw, we found like a piece of white cloth in the room, and we threw it over that. And it did, and we had five objects on it, and we did everything, and it just didn't work. Like, who's, what object belongs to whom?
Well, that was about, what, about 10 inches in diameter?
Yeah, yeah, it was very small. I mean, it was a stool, you know, it was one of those high stools. So it was also a little high. You know, there's all kinds of things that weren't really working with it. But the biggest problem was, there was too small of a surface to discriminate what object belonged to what chair. So that slowed the game down, too. That was our very first game. And then, so I believe over lunch, we sped over. Did we get the table?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We zipped home to get the table over lunch and came back. So for the afternoon, we were ready with a table. And with a new technique innovated for just this environment called Poo Corner to give them choice, or at the very least, the illusion of choice, which, you know, in the end, we wanted to run a good game.
Well, and I the thing that popped in my mind about giving people the choice in the way and some kind of option out was an elementary school teacher that was a mentor of mine a long time ago. I don't remember her name. I know she's in the Portland public school system somewhere. So, hey, a shout-out to you, wherever you are, and Australia. So I think she was a third-grade teacher, and she had a little corner in her room that was called Australia. So when kids were getting out of hand, unruly, whatever, she would say, hey, time for a little Australia visit. And so it wasn't like a timeout, but it was more like a break area. And so the kids could go back there and you know, hang out, look at maps. The teacher loved Australia, and so she had maps of Australia, you know, boomerang, stuffed koalas, all that kind of stuff all over.
Yeah.
So the kids could go out to Australia and you know, hang out in Australia for a while, and then, you know, they either got bored or didn't, and then came back into class. And part of that Poo Corner, you know, like Winnie the Pooh, let's distinguish this. That,
not
crap corner that you get stuck in. So, but here's a couple interesting things that started happening then. So one of the great things with doing the 2-day, four sessions, back to back to back, bam, 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 allowed us to see a problem, innovate a technique, and implement it in about an hour.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So we had this just real sense of how we could adjust things. I highly recommend it. And they were, for the audience, it was a new batch of kids every time.
Yeah.
So there were no repeat customers.
No.
So we call it Poo Corner, right? And the kids, you know, they understood it. And so for the next round, we said, all right, go to Poo Corner if you feel like it.
Yeah.
And totally invite you to go to Poo Corner. But here's what we didn't do. We didn't populate Poo Corner with anything.
Yeah.
So it was like exile.
Yeah.
A bleak tabletop with nothing. Like, you want to go hang out in the boring space? Yeah, well, be our guest. So it really wasn't much of a choice.
Yeah.
But it still added a massive amount of energy to the game because the kids knew that there was at least some place they could escape to.
Right.
A couple people did. A couple kids, you know.
Towards the end of the game, there was a couple people who went there. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised at how I noticed when we were playing that nobody was going to Poo Corner. Nobody was going to Poo Corner. Also, we went out of our way to engage the Lunatic Fringe, and we innovated a new technique, which is the... we didn't actually give it a technique name, but it was a conscious strategy. It needs a technique name. It was basically take care of your people. You know, take care of the inner circle.
So I ran the second game, and so I tried to think, like, okay, how are we going to engage that Lunatic Fringe and make sure that their hands keep moving? And so when the Lunatic Fringe and the inner circle were all seated, I said, okay, inner circle, point to your angels. And they all pointed to specific people, made eye contact across the lotus. And everybody kind of gave each other the high sign, the thumbs up, the wink, wink, you know, hey, I got you, you know, I got your back kind of thing. And then it was Lunatic Fringe, point to your inner circle that you're being angels for. And they all pointed back. So we had this, a real personal connection now with everyone. Like, all right, look, this is your job. And we really set it up, in the beginning of the game to say, you are not the peanut gallery.
Yeah.
you are all responsible for at least copycatting and hopefully pulling each other through.
Yeah.
And you are going to be in the hot seat. And, you know, if you're not helping the hot seat folks, then what are you doing? You know, how are you helping? And now you're just staring and you're just making it uncomfortable. And we kind of made a joke like, yeah, well, you know, we'll charge admission if all you're going to do is stare.
Yeah, right.
So
it's not a spectator sport.
Yeah, it's not a spectator sport. So what ended up happening then was a couple people ended up over in Pooh Corner, in the desolate desert of Pooh Corner. And here's a couple things we didn't do. A, we didn't populate Pooh Corner with anything interesting. And B, we didn't give them the option of coming back. So once they went to Pooh Corner, we didn't tell them, hey, and when you're bored of Pooh Corner and you feel like you're relaxed again, come on back and play. And so certainly the next game after that, we absolutely did that. So, oh, here's another thing that I did to engage the Lunatic Fringe, was I made a very conscious effort to make sure that every time I could think of it, I said, hey, way to go, Lunatic Fringe.
Yeah.
And I instantly saw a spike in the Lunatic Fringe.
Ah, interesting.
Instantly.
Interesting.
And so I kept doing it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, just randomly sort of when there was a break, when somebody was thinking about something, when something was happening, just this constant positive reinforcement. Great job, Lunatic Fringe. Great job. Wait, and I would actually single out individuals on the Lunatic Fringe, and I'm like, ah, way to pull them through it. Way to pull them through.
Yeah.
So the next game that we ran, I did more of that, more of the engaging, inner circle, point to your angels, point to your inner circle people. Pooh Corner was now populated with language revitalization books.
And a map of British Columbia. Yeah, I brought a bunch of language books, and I brought I brought the map from the First Peoples Heritage Language and Culture Council, their status report on the state of BC First Nation languages. They've got this great map in the back. And so it was very colorful, so I threw it down there. And so they at least had some stuff to look at and sort through.
And so during the next games, there actually ended up being more and more kids going to the Pooh Corner, which I thought was interesting. Sort of now that it's populated, now I'm more interested in going. And we gave them permission to come back, so a couple of the kids did. And they were really poring over those books, actually. It was sort of this like, well, if you want to go over there, fine, here's something to look at. And they're like, oh. And very interesting to see the kids over in Pooh Corner, like, straining their necks to still watch the game.
Yes.
And
yeah, they were rubbernecking. Oh. What's going on over there while I'm over here at Pooh Corner? You know, like, why, you know, I mean, it's clear at some point there is like, I want both.
And they were copycatting and that kind of thing from, you know, now they're 20 feet away from the action, but now they're copycatting.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
For
copycats from Pooh Corner. Pooh Corner copycats. And so that really helped out a lot. So we certainly watched a fantastic progression over the four sessions of how far we could get the kids, what the energy level was like by the end of it, how far we got the kids.
Oh, yeah. And we got farther and farther.
Farther and farther to the end when we got to what is that, whose is that, want, have, give, take, trade, steal, and if, then, but, and for. And we still had time, and we still had, what, 20 minutes left or something?
We had a half hour left, which gave us enough time to do the best. I mean, like, really, it was the last session that was the shining session, where then I sat down and I hunted. We created this sort of scenario where I'm like, I'm going to, Evan's an old guy, and then the cafe across the street from the school, where we had lunch, actually. And it's a very popular hangout for the kids, so it was a very good thing to pretend, you know. So we're in that cafe, and he's wearing a shirt that says, I heart speaking Chinook Wawa. So I pretended to hunt. I role-played hunting Chinook Wawa out of Evan. And we went to What Is That? And make me say yes and make me say no, right? And Chinook Wawa. And then I'm still sitting down. A lot of the kids are in the circle. Everybody can see. We're actually on at the low table. And so next to me is this young woman. And so I pretend that, like, I pretend the time has passed. And I turn to her and I'm like, hey, just met this guy at the cafe. He speaks this language. I really want to show it to you. And her eyes lit up, and we played this little game where I was like, that I assumed that, you know, we were part of this cadre of people who had played Where Are Your Keys in this class, and this is time had passed. And so we started playing, you know, this Chinook Wawa, what is that? Ikta'uguk, as we say. And all I saw her eyes light up. I saw everybody around me, their eyes lighting up, all the kids. And I realized, whoa, there's something going on here. So I said, hey, help out all everybody, let's all, you know, help out Lunatic Fringe, and let's all get in on this together. And they all just, like, scooted their chairs. There's barely, like, a breath between, you know, when I said that, and they're just like, skirt, 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 yeah! And they just started having a blast.
Which basically pushed me out of the circle. Yeah. I felt the chairs incoming, and I was like, and I backed out of the circle really quick, and then just watched you push Chinook Wawa into all those kids real quick.
Yeah.
And they were all copycatting. They were all into it. Everything. And the interesting thing that happened that I pointed out to those kids was that the thing is that when you copycat, especially as a group, if she was just that one spry girl was just herself and all alone, she's not going to remember all of the vocabulary getting thrown at her. I mean, it's just too much right out of the gates. But as a group, you know, part of the people remembered the first sound of the word, and then part of the people remembered the middle sound, and some of the people remembered the last part of the sound. So as a group, when everybody said it, you know, right along with the sign language, it actually sounded like one person was speaking, because they then piece together all of the words.
Yeah.
What a fantastic group memory, as opposed to a single person's independent memory.
Right.
What just a fantastic tool that ended up being.
And it's at that time when we finally got somebody to say, "You're blowing my mind," which I had been waiting for like 2 days, you know. And I mean, that just like. Basically, I just think it's a point of courtesy when we share where your keys with somebody that they respond with, "You are blowing my mind." I mean, it's just like common decency, you know? But we didn't hear anything of the sort until that last game, and then the end of the last game after the language hunt, when this one young man was like, "Oh my God, you're blowing my mind. This is amazing." And there really started to be a chorus of voices of, "Oh my God, this is amazing, and we can do so much with this," and "Oh," and, you know, some gnashing of teeth over their Spanish classes and how slow they went. But
well, because you sort of pointed out the elephant in the room, which was, well, imagine if we came back every day.
Yeah.
Like, we did this in an hour.
Yeah.
And imagine if we came back tomorrow and did this for an hour. Imagine if we came back every single day. Imagine how much you would learn. And one girl was kind of like, ugh, like, miffed. Yeah. That she'd sort of been cheated out of her language class time.
Right.
That was sort of like, well, I could be doing this, and what the heck? And
right.
So that was pretty fun. I mean, and you know, like all power to the language teachers in institutional language setting. You know, keep up the good fight, and you know, maybe this is also kind of an opportunity to have the kids start teaching the teacher how they need to be taught in order to be even more effective. And so we deputized all the kids to, you know, really, really play with this and show their teachers this and work with the teachers on this so that they could get their needs met. And one of the things afterwards was we went out to lunch with Kent and Gay, and Gay said something wonderful that was, yeah, I mean, imagine in a couple years if we could get all the students at Cleveland High School to be running around the halls yelling, "How fascinating!" I mean, what a massive desperation load off of all those students' chests to be able to just, you know, have a good time. And, oh, well, that's something that happened in one of the games, too. One of the kids, you know, thinking that he was being all smart and teenagery, he was like, "You can yell 'How fascinating!' at any time during the game?" And we said, "Well, yeah." And so right then he was like, "Well, how fascinating."
Yeah.
And then just periodically throughout the game, he would just yell "How fascinating."
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah, it just added energy. I mean, it was. It's funny, like, those things that in another environment would create chaos, and perhaps as intended, you know, and when in the Wear Your Keys environment, just inject energy into the game. So he wanted to call how fascinating when he felt like it, and all it did was just open people up wider and keep the energy flowing. It was just a fantastic urge on his part. You know, I mean, and maybe it was innocent and maybe not intending to be like smart alecky and chaotic, you know, whatever it was, it made the game even better. That urge is really cool.
So by the end of that fourth session, we basically got those 20 kids up to, and basically what was that, 1 hour then? Maybe an hour and 10 minutes of playing Wear Your Keys. So around the table, group of 20, maybe 21, 22. I lost count, actually. And then, you know, plus Kent and then his student teacher, who's going to be an ESL teacher. And what was her name? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't.
I don't remember your name. Sorry. So, yeah, there's probably 25, 26 people by the time it was all said and done. And now one thing that also... So that was an hour and 10 minutes or so to get people up to what is that, whose is that, want, have, give, take, if, then, but, and, for.
Yeah.
Huge. And of... Oh, want, have, give, take, trade, steal.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, an interesting thing that happened also was that a student... In the lunatic fringe, requested a Craigslist.
Oh, yeah.
Raised her hand and said, "Can I have a Craigslist?" And I said, "Oh, you'd like some information and you'd like it delivered in a list? Oh, by all means, I'd be happy to oblige." And she says, "Please." And so we go into the thank you, you're welcome, please, sorry. Wait, how did it go? Please, thank you, you're welcome, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please, thank you, you're welcome, sorry. Please, thank you, you're welcome, sorry. And so that was just fantastic. And then other students, of course, started requesting information and lists.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of people
started accepting it. Then that was actually day one. That was day two. That was day one afternoon session. So that was the second of four sessions. So the next day, we were so aware of how unusual it was for a beginning player to ask for a Craigslist. That's actually a mark of a fairly experienced player who's taken enough ownership of the game that they now start wielding a technique like Craigslist. It's far more common for people to master, like, how fascinating and full and copycat before they start talking about Craigslist, you know? And, well, apparently she had mastered those other ones and moved on to Craigslist, you know? So we came in the next day thinking, well, how can we add to that? I mean, if this is a possibility in this group, how can we make it bigger?
And so I really played up that thing that I said, because it apparently hit home to some kids. So I was like, oh, you'd like some information and you'd like it presented in a list? I'd be happy to oblige.
Yeah.
And really played that and played that. Let's see. We had this one girl who was playing, and she just played fantastically. Never got into the inner circle.
Yeah.
Was a fantastic angel on your shoulder. And she would actually, when she knew the answer, she would kind of raise her hand and say, like, pick me, I know the answer, follow me, I'll help you. Yeah. And that was really great, too. Actually, the same girl who requested the Craigslist.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Huh. There's one. Keep your eye on that girl. That's a smart cookie. So, let's see. What else happened? Really accenting the whole great job, Lunatic Fringe.
Well, there's a thing that happens with the game that when it really works, there is a reluctance to leave and this sort of chatter. And the very last session of the game is when we achieve that. I remember especially these two young women were like, are going, oh my God, we could use it for this and we can use it for that. And at this point, the classroom had almost emptied out. And they were still hanging around talking about the possibilities that this game had brought up. And that was the first, that fourth session was the first time we got there. And that certainly means to me, you know, that we reached that altitude that I think is just sort of needs to be standard operating procedure, you know. But since it was such a new environment, we didn't know what new techniques we were going to need.
Oh, and one thing that we really made sure that we hit was what is that? and make me say yes, make me say no.
Yes.
We made sure to put those in there because you were doing an experiment before.
Yeah.
I run a lot of games where it's just positive all the way to the end. That though I might even mention no, but I never run technique make me say no, which, for example, if you're holding a red pen and I say, is that a red pen? Okay, let me set this up. So I have a red pen. You're sitting next to me. I say, what is that? You say, that's a red pen. I say to you, to make you say yes, is that a red pen? And you say, yes, that's a red pen. Full sentence, question and answer. Well, then, after you've got that down, I may run around where I say, hey, what's this? Oh, that's a red pen. Oh, is that a black pen? Make you, yeah, no, that is not a black pen, that is a red pen. So I've made you say no, and I get to hear what no sounds like. And this is a very easy thing to do when you're language hunting, is to, you always have enough tools to say, even if you don't know how to say no, you have enough tools to find out how they would say no by saying, by having two objects and just going, you know, a rock and a stick and going, oh, is this stick you're pointing at, is that a rock? Or to the rock, is that a stick? And then you'll hear the word no. I mean, of course. So before, I just didn't do make me say no that often, because I could get a really fast game all the way to one half give take. But I started to really question the richness of the transactions I was having at one half give take. And I started to wonder, and Dustin Rivers is actually the one who made me wonder this, because he would make me say yes, make me say no, almost benchmarks for, well, absolutely benchmarks for every level. He saw them as like a point on that you always got around to as you got each new piece of language. So I thought, well, what if I bump make me say no like really early and make it part of the game from the beginning? And I think it really did add, it absolutely added to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It gave the kids, when it came up, hey, I want your dollar. You want, give me your dollar? Then the kid could say, no.
No, I not want
And then, you know, the crowd laughs, and then, like, well, maybe I'll steal your dollar, and then all the mayhem can then actually take place. Really, a lot of complex transactions now start happening. As soon as somebody says no, I want to say chaos happens, but it's not chaos.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, for whatever reason, the group dynamic says, now we have these tools, I'm going to stay within the parameters of the language that I already know and can wield, and I'm going to start making the transactions more complicated.
Yeah.
They just do it,
yeah.
Which is just crazy, but, well, of course, that's what we want them to do.
Right.
So, and then everything just starts getting complex. Oh, well, I will give you my red pen and his rock.
Yeah.
And then the guy who has the rock is like, wait, but that's my rock. And then, you know, and now you're in an argument.
Yeah.
You're actually having a very detailed, I mean, negotiate.
Language you started learning an hour ago.
Let's, you know, let's fight in sign language.
Yeah.
Because that'll just be more exciting than if we fight in English. And, you know, give me an hour and we'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that having that pattern laid out was really good.
And then the no pressure refresher.
Oh, yeah. So we were around the table, and then we did a little no pressure refresher, and then one of the kids said, well, what's the sign for no pressure refresher? Same kid who said, you're blowing my mind.
Yeah, right.
He says, well, what about this? And he kind of made this, like, whew, motion across his forehead. Technique, no pressure refresher, whew. And we said, hey, great.
Yeah.
Contract. And so we got to talk a little bit about contract, and then we got to talk a little bit about the community of language hunters and the community of people making Where Are Your Keys better. That this is an open source game that we are sharing with everyone as fast as we can so that people can begin to learn languages in a community style, community setting, with ease and comfort and excitement and laughter and not, you know, getting tortured, really. So, yeah, so that was really nice. And the kid, you know, we flat out told him, you know, you may have shaved off, you know, at least a couple minutes of the game And who knows, down the road, that may actually end up saving a language.
Yeah.
And the kids kind of got this sort of, whoa, really? And yes, absolutely, we're absolutely serious about that. That now he has added to the Superman 3. Another penny has been shaved.
Yeah, I also noticed that they really ate up Technique Mumble. That one just got them copycatting and having a blast. I mean, every time he did it, you know, Technique Mumble goes, Technique, right? Mumble, because with the idea being a perfect accent is actually not desirable from the get-go. What you want is good enough for now. You want, close enough that you can make the transaction and continue moving forward. And because if you speak in your accent, you actually have an easier time hearing the words and sort of moving them around. If it's too much of an exotic accent, it doesn't really help you. And you can waste a lot of time trying to get that perfect sound before giving up and out of frustration. So we explained that and showed them Technique Mumble, and boy, they just loved copycatting that one.
Yeah. It's funny to see a whole class of people sitting there going, blah, 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 yeah, but yeah. Very seriously. Yeah, no, this is serious business. This is serious. We need you to do this.
Yeah.
Lives depend on you going, blah, 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 blah. Which they do. Well, any other... wonderful, fascinating moments come out of that?
No, that was about it.
All right. Well, good night, all.
Good night.
You've been listening to episode 26 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on May 13th, 2010. Thanks for listening.